You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who wanted to be in porn but didn't have the acting chops, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome to Nightlight. Ladies and gentlemen, great to have you with me. Happy Wednesday, everybody. We are halfway through the week, a little more than halfway if you work a 9 to 5. I'm getting there. Great to have you with me. We have a really fun show tonight. And it's interesting that you picked, Conrad, that lead-in that I wanted to be in porn, but I didn't have the acting chops because I don't know if you've heard the Hollywood Beats all day, but I broke a big story about the celebrity sex tapes.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
I feel like that'd be a really interesting show, you know?
Yeah.
Are you going to watch?
I don't know.
I did watch something last night.
Really?
It was The Virgin Show.
Oh, did you really?
It was absolutely
Are You My First,
awful.
It's called, right? Really?
It was awful.
How could it not be?
The lines, like, they have two narrators, a woman and a guy. And they say, the woman talks for two lines, and then the guy says, and they're like, we just broke your two-person virginity of narrators on a virgin show.
Wow, is that a bad joke?
And
that's not even a joke.
That was like 2 minutes wow. into it. That was 2 minutes into the show.
So, for lack of a better phrase, they shot their wad in 2 minutes.
It was...
That's terrible.
Every line that they had that was like making a joke on virgins was some of the worst writing I've ever heard. And I'm surprised that they didn't like stop what they were doing there and be like, are you sure you wanted me to say this?
Right.
It was terrible. And the people in it are like,
do you believe they're virgins?
Some of them, yes.
Okay.
Others, no.
You think they're faking it?
It's bad TV. You know, it's like you can watch those bad TV shows like to hate watch it or cringe watch it. This is like a new ultimate of cringe watching.
We're talking about a show called Are You My First? It's something we kind of elaborated on a bit yesterday. It's a new Netflix reality show where people lose their virginity on a reality show. And most of them say they were waiting for that special moment, I guess, when a streaming platform came along to broadcast it. That's what Conrad is talking about. Doesn't sound like you're endorsing the show.
It's terrible. Okay. I watched one episode. Well, not even one episode. I watched like 30 minutes because I was like, all right, it's got to get better at some point.
Oh.
And it just kept getting worse and worse.
Those kind of shows, if they are bad out of the gate, they aren't going to get better.
It was so bad.
That sounds terrible.
And... like in like 35 minutes into it, they introduced a new character, or not a character, a new guy who's a virgin on the Bachelorette, and all the guys are like, no, how are we supposed to compete with him?
He's got reality show experience. He's not that's so bad. I can't even like. I am laughing, though, because you said 35 minutes into it, like you're still watching, and then you're like, and then in episode 4, I couldn't believe when they, like, how many minutes of screen time are you going to give them, you know?
I pretty much shut it off after I heard that line of, how are we supposed to compete with them? I was like, oh, brother, all right.
Oh, that's so funny. I'm guessing the show has no nudity or sex either, which, I mean, let's be honest, if you're going to have a show about virginity and, you know, attractive people, which I saw on the ad, it looked like, you know, people that are attractive. It's not, and there's tons of reasons why people don't lose their virginity. It has nothing to do, or it doesn't always have to do with looks. It could just be like in the movie, The 40-Year-Old Virgin, they missed their chance or whatever. Or like, let's say you're waiting for marriage and then it doesn't work out. And it's like, well, I'm 26 now.
One of the girls in it equated herself with Queen Elizabeth saying, do you think Queen Elizabeth slept around? No. And then she did it in a British accent. I don't think so.
Oh, God. You got to find some clips of that. We got to play some of those.
What?
please keep watching that and let's find some clips. That's awesome. All right. Lots more great conversation to come, folks. We are just talking about a show about virgins, and that's our opening act because we're going to talk about celebrity sex tapes tonight. I swear I'm not turning this into a Dr. Ruth type show, but it's just these two shows are out at around the same time, and celebrity sex tapes, they promise to reveal the truth. Or the hidden secrets behind celebrity sex tapes, which is weird because they're kind of out there. And I think some of them legitimately got stolen from homes. Like I think Pamela and Tommy Lee's sex tape was stolen by construction workers, if I remember correctly. But nowadays, it's like everybody's got a sex tape. I feel like I'm the only person without a sex tape.
Well, you know, like the intro said, you didn't have the acting job.
I can't act. I have a terrific body. I just can't deliver a line. But there's all kind of, they're everywhere. I know Colin Farrell, they say, has one. Pamela and Tommy Lee. There was Jane Kennedy, who used to host an NFL show in the morning on Sunday mornings. And there was she was married to a boxer named Isaac something or other. They had one. That was the first one I was ever aware of. And I remember thinking, oh my God, that's horrible. Can you imagine if a tape like this got out? And then you realize some people might want them out there. Like, I'm so suspicious of the Kardashian one. Like, yeah. They're just publicity hounds. I believe that was on purpose.
Well, what was his name? RJ or something?
Ray J? Yeah.
Maybe it was him. Because he's like, I want to be more popular than
maybe it was him. I'm not saying it was Kim Kardashian, but I wouldn't put it past the Kardashian family to do something like that. But yeah, he had a lower Q rating, I'm sure, than Kim. And that guy was a good actor.
I didn't even know he was an actor.
I'm kidding. He's a rapper, I think. I just mean in relation to the worst. I remember seeing the Pamela and Tommy Lee one. A friend of mine had it, and they talk. It's like they're trashy enough because it's like you feel weird watching it, but when they talk, they sound like idiots. It's like you couldn't even, like porno writing is better than what Pamela and Tommy Lee were saying to each other. Colin Farrell, too. I have a friend who has all of them.
On VHS.
And he's been on this show. and it's like Colin Farrell was even talking. He sounds like an idiot. Like, people are not at their best verbally when they're having sex. So I don't hold them to a standard. You know, I get that it's going to be stupid, but at least... And that makes me also think like they were legitimately stolen because nobody would want people to hear if they consider themselves a master monologist. They wouldn't want that out there. But the Kim Kardashian one, I don't know. That looked kind of staged to me. I only watched it like 14 times, but I got a grasp of it.
You keeping count?
I don't know if I've ever... I do remember seeing like on those like entertainment shows, she's like talking to the camera. I mean, it's... So anyway, there you go. You got a new show to watch, folks. The Secrets of Celebrity Sex Tapes. And that is on the Arts and Entertainment Network. Great stuff. Let's get to our speaking. While we're on this topic, so we can sort of segue off of it. Tonight's question of the night is inspired by The Secrets of Celebrity Sex Tapes. Let's get to the Nightlight question of the night.
Let's talk about the question.
Okay, question.
Question. Question.
Pregunta.
Question.
Question.
Hey, I have a question.
Questions.
This question.
Domanda.
Question.
Question.
Questions.
What two celebrities do you never want to see in a sex tape? Who are two celebrities you hope never make a sex tape? That is tonight's question of the night. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. I put this in the beats. I'm going to stick with my answer. Seth Rogen and Marjorie Taylor Greene. That would be an unholy pairing on many levels. I don't think they even like each other, I'm guessing, for political reasons, but I never want to see those two in a sex tape.
You know, Seth Rogen has been in a sex tape.
Please tell me, a movie, maybe.
Yeah. The movie sex tape.
The Knocked Up. Oh, he's in the movie, is it Zach and Miri?
Zach and Miri make a
sex tape? Yeah. So you said Pete Davidson and Bella Ramsey. Yeah, that's kind of that'd be a tough one. That would be a tough watch. So let us know, folks. You can also let us know on the app or on the stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, Or X, and drop us a like or a follow if you don't mind while you're there. But chime in, be part of the show. We'd love to hear what you think. How gross can we make this, really? Like, how horrifying can we make the idea of a sex tape to the point where nobody, it would have negative box office numbers. Nobody would ever want to see it. Let us know what you think. I was kind of in a mood. I played what I call roadkill pole position on the way down. There was at least two animals killed, body parts strewn about on the highway. And it's like, well, do I go over a deer leg with my car or do I swerve? You know, it's kind of dangerous either way. But I was able to swerve because I don't need a deer leg like going up into my exhaust system or something. It was very dangerous, though. Not a fun ride.
You always have a that commute's different
not
story
getting
every
me.
Day.
The commute's not getting to me at all. So that's what I was dealing with. And then I got to tell you this, folks. I fast from time to time. I just finished a 36-hour fast today, and it turned into like a 41-hour fast because I had a guy over who was giving me an estimate on my roof. And we got to talking, and then my daughter, you know, I went too long, and then my daughter had something to do. We were going to go out to have breakfast. And I was really excited to have like a breakfast burrito today, craving one. I always crave like protein when I come off a fast. Well, 36 hours turned into like 41 hours. We ended up barely making it to this place for lunch. Nope, we don't have the breakfast burrito. We have no breakfast. And their lunch menu is like, it's kind of one of these boutique places, you know? They don't, it's not somewhere to go if you're hungry. So I ordered a black and blue burger, and it's like a boutique black and blue. I'm coming off a fast, and I've got a burger that's the size of a quarter on bread and like seven chips. And I said to my daughter, we might have to get a pizza on the way home because this is not cutting it. I'm depressed, but you know, I'm over it now.
You know what I had for breakfast on Saturday? It was super good. Or on Sunday, sorry. Let's just say we went out downtown on Saturday night, and then the morning after we were like, yeah, let's get some breakfast. Got two eggs. Some pieces of bacon, hash browns, and some pancakes with Reese's chocolate chips on it.
That doesn't sound terrible. The pancakes,
it was
at least.
Amazing.
Yeah,
it,
because
it
you
so
put
good.
Chocolate chips in them, right? Like, that's not a bad thing.
So it was like chocolate chips and Reese's chocolate chips. It was so good.
I would dig that, I think, because people put peanut butter. Don't you put peanut butter on your pancakes? Or you've tried
I put
it?
Peanut butter on my waffles, my pancakes.
Wow.
And syrup. I don't have it often, but boy, was that good.
Yeah, that's kind of what I needed today. Maybe a different, but I needed something filling. Some good movies opening this weekend, folks. Honey, Don't, a new effort from Ethan Coen. I hope he and Joel start making films again. Because I'm like, is something going on there? They don't like each other anymore? Sibling rivalry? But apparently, based on my research, they're not feuding. They just are doing their own thing for a while. That's fine. But I did not like his last movie, Drive Away Dolls. I thought it was kind of lame. But it's a good cast. Margaret Qualley, Aubrey Plaza, Chris Evans.
I still haven't seen it.
That's all right. There's like... No, we'll talk about it when we come back. All right, we'll talk about that when we come back. I'm going to tell you what else is opening and getting great reviews. And then Conrad is going to tell us about a fight that broke out on a movie set, and we'll read your text. We're doing it all on Nightlight tonight, folks. Great to have you with me. It's Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
We have two great guests. We got so caught up in sex tape talk, immoral sex tape talk, that I did not tease my guests. And I have two outstanding guests tonight. Author Chris Miklos is here. He wrote a book called Tick Town. It's like a pulpy fiction type novel about mutant ticks in a Wisconsin tourist town. It looks fantastic. Chris has also made a couple of movies, and he's Madison-based. We will talk to Chris at 6:35. And then one of our newest on-air hosts here at this specific station, WGBW, is in the building. She will be here at 7:20, Miss Laura McKenna. Very excited to get to know Laura. As many of you probably heard, they switched the format here at WGBW. It is now local news and timeless hits, and Laura is all part of that. So we'll get to know Laura a little bit as well in hour number two. I'm off tomorrow night, folks. What are we doing tomorrow, Conrad? We got a best of show because you have to be off too.
Yeah, we got a best of featuring Mike Schmidt and his great story about the
basketball.
Yep. We had a listener that said they really liked that story.
Yeah,
so I was
we
should bring that back.
Great story.
I also brought David Zucker again.
Okay.
The interview. And then Horace Green finishing it off.
Outstanding. So that's the best of show. We won't be here live tomorrow, folks. I'm taking a few days off to take care of some family stuff and a little staycation. But we will we'll have you well covered here at Nightlight with the best of tomorrow night. David Zucker, Mike Schmidt, and Horace Green. And then Friday night
is Aaron Carreno guest hosting.
Yeah, guest host. And still a live show with Conrad Nero.
Terry Barr is still going to be on the show.
Outstanding.
And just, we got a special surprise guest in the first first 6:35, so.
A surprise guest.
Yeah.
Wow.
Aaron's recommendation, so.
Well, seems like you guys might have told me about that, but it's Nightlight with Peach Well. Hey, whatever, that's fine. No, it'll be fine. Aaron does a great job. He is no stranger to being on the air behind the mic, so I'm thrilled Aaron's doing it, and it's so much better, I think, than just, a best of can be fun, too, because it's highlights, but I think a live show is better.
Of course, yeah.
And then I'll be off Monday and Tuesday as well, back on Wednesday. So we'll figure out Monday and Tuesday as well. John and Gordy, right?
John and Gordy are going to be the guest hosts for Monday and Tuesday.
All right, you guys are in for a treat because John and Gordy host the WMDX morning show in Madison here on Civic Media. But they're only on Madison in the mornings. I love being on their show. They're so much fun. They're radio pros. And they're going to have a blast, I think, hosting Nightlight next week. So we've got you covered. Don't go anywhere. Still tune in. It's still going to be the same Nightlight with different people. So
are you going to make a sex tape on your time off? Or
that's the plan. I've got the ad out on Craigslist. Just waiting to hear back. Wouldn't it be weird if you put an ad out like to make a sex tape and then the person shows up and sees you and goes, ooh.
Never mind.
I'm going to take a powder. Thank you very much anyway. I was actually here to buy the extra computer cord. Not for the sex tape. All right, so great guest tonight. Chris Miklos will be here at 6:35 talking about his book, Tick Town. And one of the newest members of our WGBW team here in Green Bay, Laura McKenna, at 7:20. So let's get some, we should probably do some text, huh?
Definitely.
I love this one. Dave on the stream. Our question is, what two celebrities you hope never make a sex tape? And Dave Kunish on the stream says, Conrad and Kate McKinnon.
I think she would be repulsed, too, because I don't think she likes men.
You don't think she wants to? Oh, that's right. I thought you were going to say she doesn't want to do anything with fanboy Conrad, but you might have two things working
against
you.
Thanks for calling me celeb, though. I really appreciate it.
Dave also says, I like both of them, but not naked. Well, you don't have to be naked on a sex tape.
That's true.
Dave says, Sly and Arnold. I don't think you have to worry about that either. Although you never know. Who knows what goes on behind closed doors. We have some great social media responses to Daniel Wheeler. Danny Wheels says Trump and Putin. I think we can all agree on that. And then Alan Martin on social media in response to Danny Wheels' response, Trump and Putin. Alan Martin says, Daniel Wheeler, too late. Alan obviously has the inside scoop on a Trump-Putin sex tape, something we never need to see. Nick Wallander, our pal, says Kermit and Miss Piggy. Oh, come on. That'd be kind of sweet, don't you think?
I don't know why they cracked me up so much when I was reading it before.
You could have that be PG-rated, too. They don't even have parts. I think we're fine.
It could be in the Muppets movie.
Yeah, it could be wholesome. Stacey Sue says Trump and Betty White. I could see half of that, but Betty White, I got to tell you, into her 80s, Betty White, was not, well, she's a beautiful woman and she's hilarious. I'm half with you, Stacey Sue. Matt Kassane on social media says JoJo Siwa and Clay Aiken. I got to Google. I think JoJo Siwa is the, I was thinking he's the founder.
She's one of those child stars that was like, her mom made her dance. I think she was on like Dance Moms or something like that.
And
her mom went super hard on her.
Okay.
And now she just makes music herself, but like is super annoying.
I was thinking, all right, I apologize, Matt. I got this wrong. I was thinking Curtis Sliwa, who is the founder of the Guardian Angels. They used to ride the subway trains and protect people. An awesome group. When I first heard about the Guardian Angels, I absolutely loved the Guardian. And I would see them. Sometimes they had a Chicago chapter on the subway in Chicago, too. And I was always like, oh, that's cool. Mike Desitel on the social media says Steve Buscemi and Shirley MacLaine. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I can't say I want to see that, but I can't say I'd be completely repulsed by that pairing. Two talented actors. All right. When we come back, folks, we are going to talk about, oh my God, this is the second question this week I've set up that just like invited people to talk about Trump. Monica Hale says Donald and Melania. Oh, I got to think of something better. All right, we're coming back, folks. We're going to talk about giant mutant ticks invading your Wisconsin town. Chris Miklos joins us next. He is an author. Laura McKenna coming up in hour two. Great to have you with me. Answer our question. Be part of the show. We'll read your text on the radio. It's Pete Schwab and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I want to hold you so much. At long last, love has arrived. And I thank God I'm alive. You're just...
Hey, this is Mike Starr, and you're listening to Nightlight with Pete Schwab.
That song?
It was a tag.
It was a tag. Who do we have?
It was Mike Starr.
Mike Starr. You know, it's so funny. You read my mind. I was going to have you do the Mike Starr tag. He's got a really identifiable voice, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just think dumb and dumber when I hear Mike's voice. Laura McKenna will be here at 7:20, folks, in the building. That'll be fun to have her in studio. Our question of the night is, what two celebrities do you hope never make a sex tape? There is a new show called Secrets of Celebrity Sex Tapes out that has to be probably binge watched. I don't think it's, you think they're ever going to have a cliffhanger? Will Tommy Lee and Pamela have sex again? So bad. They should do some ADR and dub voices in because the talking is so God awful. All right. Without further ado, let's get to our first guest of the night. Very excited to have this gentleman on the show. He was referred to me by our pal Rob Thomas, and he has a new book out called Tick Town. He's also a filmmaker and a Madison-based artist, and he joins us now over the stream, Mr. Christopher Miklos. Hey, Christopher.
Hey, Pete. How are you?
Do you prefer Christopher or Chris?
Chris is fine, thanks.
Okay. And I'm saying Miklos correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. You kind of gave a... close enough. Yeah, that's fine.
All right. You know, I say it different. I say it like three different ways. So, you know.
Okay. Well, however, I'm here to serve. So, and my last name, I've been hearing Schwabba differently all my life. So, I totally feel your pain a little bit there.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Thanks for inviting me on tonight.
Well, it's such a great book. The first thing I have to ask you, you're a horror writer. Are there two people you never want to see make a sex tape? I don't mean
there
to put you on the
several,
spot.
To be honest with you. But I'm gonna go with Christy Noem and Stephen Miller.
You know what's so funny is I typically shy away from politics on the show because it's politics a lot during the day and current events. But this question was not at all meant. Sometimes it just goes there. And it's not political to say those are two unattractive people or, you know, Donald Trump is an unattractive person. That's not political. It's fact. So anyway, that's a great answer.
Ernest Borgnine is dead, so I couldn't use Ernest Borgnine. you know, who's a good standby for such a question.
It's so funny you say that. A friend of mine, Rick Corso, a stand-up comic, a guy who I worked with back in the day, said the best editing, they have a best editing Oscar. And how do you decide best editing? Oh, he cut that Ernest Borgnine love scene. This guy gets the trophy. So it's funny you went with Borgnine. All right, let's get into it, Chris. Tell us about TikTown. I love, this just sounds great.
Well, so TikTown is my debut novel, and it's got a very simple log line. It's a pulp horror novel, and the log line is simply that a Wisconsin tourist town becomes the feeding ground for a band of giant mutant ticks. And I always say that if you hear that log line and you see the cover of the book, you're going to know exactly what you're getting from TikTown. It's just a pulpy, fun, fast-paced love letter to the big bug creature feature movies of the 50s and 60s, which I used to love. This is just my it's my kind of loving homage to those movies.
I love that. It's funny too that you use a tick, because even like small ticks I find horrifying when one of them like latches on, but you have a giant like mutant tick. You've made it 10 times worse. Why is it, first of all, why haven't we really seen, to the best of my knowledge anyway, a tick monster in a movie, and why are they so creepy?
That's funny, isn't it? Because when I sat down to write the book, I wanted to do a big bug kind of creature feature sort of thing. And I was very much inspired by a book called, Night of the Crabs by Guy Ann Smith, which is exactly what you think it is. It's about giant crabs.
Sure.
So I started thinking, okay, I can't do crabs, obviously. Spiders have been done to death. And I started going through and I thought, well, we're in Wisconsin and ticks are a major problem in Wisconsin. And so I kind of did a real quick survey to see if I could find anything that was, you know, tick in literature, something written. And I couldn't really find anything. So I thought, okay, that would be really great. After I finished the book, I found that there was a movie in the early 1990s about giant ticks, not quite giant like mine, but it was like a kind of a B movie. And it was a typical 80s, 90s movie. But they're horrifying. You know, they're obviously, they spread disease and they freak you out. But if you ever see a close-up of a tick, they're just gruesome, grotesque creatures. Their mouth parts, you know, they tear and they rip and they suck. And they're just, I mean, they're really horrible things. And so I really thought that they'd be perfect for this kind of book. And I think people have responded to it.
That's excellent. If there's a tick that big, Lyme disease would be the worst of your problems. Like,
yeah, exactly.
So you said you got the idea from the crab book. How long did it take to write this? Like, even though you were kind of inspired, you settled on the tick. I've never written a book. To me, it sounds so overwhelming, but how long does it take to write a novel?
So, I mean, it's not a long book. Let me say that to start. It's about roughly 54,000 words, a little over 200 pages in print. So it's a pretty fast paced read. So it was a pretty fast paced write as well. I started it around, let's say February of 2023. And by the end of the year, so maybe, 10 months later, I was, deep into my fourth or fifth draft. And the actual first draft was probably 6 months. And then from there, it was just, rearranging things and cleaning things up and sharpening the characters. And then by February of 2024, so about a year after I started it, it was ready to start sharing with potential literary agents and publishers. And so that's what I did.
Oh, that's exciting. My guest is Christopher Miklos. He is the author of TikTown. Where can people find the book, Chris?
Well, it's actually, I'm very proud to say it's in a lot of bookstores around the state.
Nice.
It's been picked up by a couple dozen bookstores around Wisconsin, several here in Madison, but kind of in the, far reaches of the state. It's in some great bookstores in Chicago and the Twin Cities and around the country. But for the easiest way to generally get it is going to be on Amazon. You can get a paperback copy. You can get a digital copy for your Kindle. It's also an audiobook. There was an audio version that came out concurrently with the print version. And so it's widely available. It's always great to get it in the bookstore or come, you know, I'm doing a Wisconsin book tour that I'm currently in the middle of. And so it's always great when someone comes out and buys a book, you know, at one of the stops on the tour and I can sign it and meet people. It's been a really cool experience.
So for people who might not know, describe, because I was like 30 when I knew what pulp meant when it comes to fiction or books or whatever. Explain what that genre is, because in your bio it says you became a fan of pulp, the pulp horror genre. How did that happen? And explain a little bit to people what pulp is.
Sure. Well, you know, technically what pulp is it refers to these in the early part of the last century, they would print cheap books, you know, that just got kind of churned out on pulped paper. So it was like very cheaply made paper. They would churn out these paperbacks that they had writers that would just kind of churn out these, you know, things like the Tarzan series was like an early form of pulp. In horror, the fiendish Dr. Fu Manchu was like early pulp horror. But I discovered it actually only about, or I mean, I of course was familiar with these things, but I started reading it about 5 years ago. I stumbled across a book called Paperbacks from Hell, which was written by Will Erickson and Grady Hendrix. And it's basically a survey of the kind of classic pulp horror paperbacks of the 70s and 80s. And they were, it was a genre that was marked by, you know, kind of ridiculous plot lines like giant mutant crabs and larger than life heroes. And the writing is very, you know, crisp and to the point, and it's very propulsive and it moves very fast. And this book by Hendrix and Erickson was just so entertaining because it kind of surveyed all these, you know, crazy books that I was largely unfamiliar with. And so I decided to start reading some of them. And I picked up a couple of books by Graham Masterton, who's a great pulp writer, and Sean Hudson, who wrote this seminal book called Slugs, about, you know, killer slugs that like get into your mouth and, you know, dig into you. And then of course the Guyon Smith books, and his seminal work was Night of the Crabs. And as I was reading these books, I completely fell in love with them. I loved the writing style. I loved the kind of the fast paced, you know, get right to the point, you know, very propulsive, sort of storytelling. And at that time, I was finishing my second movie with my filmmaking partners, and I thought, you know, I want to try my hand at a novel, and this is the kind of novel I want to write. And so I decided that was going to be for me, and so I jumped into it.
That's really impressive. What are your writing tendencies, Chris? Like, I remember Woody Allen saying he writes every day from 9 a.m. to noon religiously, like he does not miss it. And, you know, as a writer myself, I've you know, I they always say work through. If you have writer's block, sit down anyway, come up with two words, because you never know what it could lead to. And I've tried to do that, but there's times I just don't do anything. How do you handle writer's block, and what are your writing tendencies in terms of practice?
So I tend to write in the mornings. You know, I would like to compare myself to Woody Allen, but he's much more disciplined than I am as far as that goes. And I'm a huge fan, actually, of Woody Allen. I just think he's one of the great humor writers of the last century.
I don't want to see a sex tape involving Woody Allen. I will say that.
That's a good one. That's a good one. But I have an 11-year-old daughter. And so during the school year, particularly, I'll try and get up at 5 or 5:30 and write for a couple hours before I kind of get her off to school. And then when she goes off to school, I'll tend to write for a couple hours more. But I find, you know, maybe like Alan, that once you get towards noonish, I start to kind of lose my steam and my creative juice.
Interesting.
And so I'll try to write as much as I can in the morning. And then if I have to do like PR stuff, or if I have to, you know, obviously do stuff around the house or whatever it might be, I'll go do that in the afternoons. But I just find I'm very, I think, more creative. Joe Lansdale always says that, you know, he's most creative in those hours after he gets up, because he thinks it has something to do with your mind working and you know, your sleep and the dreams, and you kind of are still in that state when you're tired, and maybe it's good for fiction and for especially horror fiction. I don't know if that's the case, but it's the period that's best for me. Definitely that first chunk of time, those first 2 hours, you know, 2.5 hours for me is always, you know, the most fruitful. And in terms of writer's block, I don't know. I actually, when I sat down to write Tick Town, I was in the middle of writer's block. I'd been writing a script, a movie script, it was like a horror comedy script about zombies that they're turned into zombies because of the perpetual Christmas music at Christmas time. And they descend on this radio station to try and
stop. Hey, Chris, we have to do a very quick break. Let's pick up right there where we were. We're coming right back. It's Nightlight with Peach Wabba talking to Chris Miklos.
The grand facade so soon will burn.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Great to have you with me on this Wednesday night. We are coming to you from beautiful downtown Green Bay at City Deck Landing, broadcasting statewide, and my current guest is joining us over the stream from Madison. His name is Chris Miklos, and he is the author of the book Tick Town, which you can purchase in various places. Give it a Google and give it a read. It sounds great. We're talking to Chris about how he got the book not only written but published. And before the break, Chris, we were talking about how you deal with writer's block, which can be very crippling at times.
Yeah, and I just... you know, I was in the middle of saying that I was writing this script and I was loving the script, and it was a horror comedy, and I was, you know, literally laughing out loud. I knew exactly where it was going. I had it all plotted out, and I was just having such a good time with it. And I got to a scene and I just stopped, and I couldn't go any further. And it's like, God, this is terrible. And I wanted nothing to do with it anymore. I was, you know, I just got hit with a block. And so I thought, you know, I'm just going to put it aside. And so I put it aside. I said, it's time to start on Tick Town. I wrote Tick Town, ignored, you know, didn't even think about that other script until I was done with it. And then when I finished Tick Town and I was, you know, in the process of pitching it to agents and whatnot, I was like, oh, I'm going to go back to that other project. And I would just, it picked it up and it flowed. And I knocked it off in about a month, finished it up. So I think sometimes you just got to walk away. You know, you want to try to keep writing, but sometimes you just, you know, your mind just doesn't want to deal with, you know, whatever problems you've got on the page. And so sometimes it's just helpful to pick up another project or work on editing something else and then come back to it. At least it worked for me.
Yeah, that's great advice. You used in the press kit you sent me. You have that one of the inspirations for Tick Town is Jaws. I just gave Jaws a rewatch about 6 weeks ago. Can you explain that? How the two are similar?
Well, Jaws is one of my favorite movies. I enjoy the book as well, but the movie I think is just one of the perfect movies that's out there. And so there's definitely parallels, of course, with the giant, you know, the giant creature, with the you know, with the small town celebration. You know, in Jaws, it's the 4th of July beach opening, and, you know, in Tick Town, it's the Harvest Moon Jubilee. There's some of Jaws in its DNA. There's a corrupt mayor in my book that is somewhat patterned on Mayor Vaughn from Jaws, but it's also, I think of him as a mix between Mayor Vaughn and Boss Hogg from the old Dukes of Hazzard show. And so it's just, it was always kind of out there, you know, in my head that, you know, this movie that really embraced a lot of the tropes of pulp horror, you know, Jaws itself, the book by Peter Benchley is very pulpy. And I thought, you know, so that's a good inspiration to draw from.
I actually like the movie Jaws better than the book, to be honest. And that, I know much. That's kind of rare. I like my chances against a shark better than a tick, just because don't swim. That's an easy one. Like, I don't like doing that anyway, but like the tick freaks me out. What was the biggest challenge getting this seen by publishers or getting it looked at? You're a first-time writer. Talk about that process a little bit.
I've produced a couple of movie scripts myself, again, with partners when we've made a couple feature films. But I've also written lots of spec scripts. And, I've spent years trying to get them noticed by literary managers and producers, and I've sent countless queries out and all that. So I'm very used to this idea that, you know, you have to like send, you know, hundreds of tentacles out into the void and hopefully it nails something. And so when I started looking at how you do it with a novel, it was very much the same thing. You know, people say, oh, it could take you years to find an agent. It could take, you know, publishers, 6 months or a year before they even look at your thing, if they even will. And so I started the process when I finished Tick Town. I had read somewhere that some good advice would be don't just send to a bunch of people at once. Send to like maybe six agents or six publishers. And then if someone gets back to you and says, well, here's a problem with your pitch or here's why we're not going to respond, you can adjust. So I sent, this was like on a Tuesday, literally, I sent six emails to agents with my pitch. And I sent six emails to publishers with my pitch. And within about an hour, one of the agents had gotten back to me and said, hey, this sounds interesting. I'd like to read it. So I sent him the full manuscript. And a week later, he emailed me and said, I love this. I want to represent it. You know, let's go.
Oh, nice.
And which was remarkable. And it turns out, and one of the reasons I had reached out to him was, it turns out, speaking of Jaws, that he was in the midst last year of representing the re-release of Benchley's Jaws for the 50th anniversary. And so I thought maybe he'd be interested, you know, in something similar. So I think it took some luck. But what I found out actually several months later, he didn't tell me this at the time, was that morning he'd been reading an article in the New York Times about pulp horror. And then I sent him this email and the subject line was Tick Town, a pulp horror novel.
Oh, wow.
So it caught his eye and he was interested. And so obviously the moral of the story is that sometimes you just got to get lucky. You just got to hit the right person at the right time. And so I was very lucky. I signed with him a few weeks later. And then he, you know, kind of took it from there, reaching out to publishers, and we found someone we liked and off and running.
That's outstanding. And it's typically the hardest people that are the hardest working people that are the luckiest, because it's all about timing. And the more that's just a great story. I did get a text here from Mark and Perry DeSackis in the 608. It says, didn't Will Ferrell confront a big tick in the version of The Land of the Lost?
It was a huge mosquito.
Oh, mosquito. Equally as horrifying. All right. Chris, can we keep you for a few minutes after the news?
Certainly.
All right. Fantastic. Chris Miklos is here. He's an author. We're going to talk to him a little bit about his filmmaking, too, after the break, and we'll read some of your texts. We're coming right back. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Act 2 is coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.